So I'll start off by chanting the four vowels. Anyone that knows it is welcome to join in. Shigu segan mo on shujo. So Buddha Self and Action, it's what I've been kind of dwelling on a bit recently. And as usual when I speak, it's a question rather than answer, is what the Buddha's teaching on the nature of the self, how that relates to Zen practice and to our lives. So I wanted to say a bit about that. So the Buddha was quite a radical teacher 2,500 years ago in that he went against the teachings of the day in some ways, not in all ways, but in some ways he went against the teachings of the day. And in particular, his teaching on the self was quite different from the orthodox view of the nature of the self up to then. So it was labelled as non-self. It's often translated as non-self, but it's not quite non-self. He basically spoke against the teaching that was prevalent at that time, which was based on the Indian Vedas, which effectively said that each of us has an eternal, unchanging self within us, which is connected with God in some way. The word God might be not quite the right word, but in some way that there's some eternal, unchanging divine self within us. And the Buddha effectively said that that wasn't the way to find liberation, and he felt that this idea of an eternal, unchanging self was a crutch that people would use to console themselves from facing reality. Not facing up to reality as it was. And his teaching's been interpreted in different ways over the years by different schools of Buddhism, and also, to be honest, by different individuals within the same school. You'll find in Zen school that there are... it's interpreted in different ways by some traditional teachers in the past and even modern. And I would say even... I feel in myself... There are days when I experience it in one way and days when I experience it another way. So I wanted to say that before I say what I'm going to say. It's slightly mutable, the teaching. But what he said was that our sense of self is in some sense an illusion. That this kind of sense that we have of being an individual unique self is illusory. It's not quite true to say that the self is an illusion. It's not quite true to say that he said the self is an illusion. But what he did say was that this sense of permanence we have of the self, the sense that our self is going to last forever, is an illusion. The sense that our self is discrete, that it's kind of well-bounded, that it's not connected with others, there's a clear division between us and others, is an illusion. And also the sense that our self is in some way central to our existence, central to existence. And there's a nice phrase by Stephen Batchelor about this. He said that in the same way that Copernicus showed that the Earth is not the centre of the physical universe, the Buddha showed that our self is not the centre of our experience universe. So he taught that the self was a process. It wasn't some kind of unique, discrete, well-defined thing. It was a process. It was a process. It's something that changes over time, that is the product of a process which forms us. And this process brings together, it comes about by the causes and conditions in the world that come together to create this sense of self within us. And this is the teaching of the dependent origination, is what some schools call it. It's the idea that our self is created not by some independent way, but is created by a wave of things coming together which allows this self to emerge, and then over time it just fades away again into the universe. So it kind of comes up, and there's an experience of a self, and then over time it fades away again, which is, if you like, birth and death, to put it in terms. So the self is something that comes and goes. So I use the phrase birth and death, but also he taught, and there is evidence, and nowadays there's evidence, kind of psychological evidence, that this sense of self is created in each moment, that it's not like this sense of self was created at birth, is with us through our life, and then fades away again, but rather in each moment we create our, or rather we is, it's difficult to use the word we, he, our I share some of what I do here with Guy to see what he says, and he says, oh, you use the word we a lot, because there's a certain, the kind of self comes into being in each moment, so we don't create it, but rather causes and conditions bring this sense of self into being in each moment, and then it fades away. And there's evidence that if you look at the kind of neurological evidence, there's evidence that when we kind of drift off, that sense of self isn't there, that sense of self is created as and when it's needed, as opposed to it existing through our whole life. It's created as and when it's needed. And so this fits in with the teaching of the Buddha, that this sense of self is something that is created by the causes and conditions and then disappears. So you can see it over the length of our lifetime, but also in each moment. It's created as and when it's needed, and then it fades away. Okay, and so a way of thinking about it, and a kind of image, a traditional image, is that it's like, rather than thinking about this sense of self being something, it's like a wave on the sea. There's a wave travelling across the sea, and the wave has a certain existence. It's not completely illusory, this wave, as it flows along the sea. But if you look at any bit of water, that bit of water is not the wave. It just passes on. So our life is like a wave flowing across the universal sea. Okay, and it kind of comes up and goes down, and it kind of bobs up and down. That's it. And so what the Buddha said was that if we know this, it can be liberating. But when I say know this, I'm not talking about intellectually. It's quite easy to intellectually sign up to it. In fact, in many ways, it accords, as I kind of alluded to, with scientific materialist ideas. It accords quite well with science, which is one of the reasons why I think Buddhism is doing well in the modern world. It's because it accords quite well with our modernist ideas and that sort of thing. But it's not enough just to kind of tick the box, say, yeah, okay, I think that's right, tick the box and I'm sorted. That's not it. From Buddha's point of view, it needs to be a lived and gut-felt experience for it to be transformative. It's not something that you just say, okay, yeah, intellectually I get that. It's quite easy to intellectually get it. But it needs to be a lived and gut-felt experience. You need to really deeply experience the notion that this self is transient and comes into being in the moment and disappears again. And when one is able to experience this, when this experience is a lived experience, then from the Buddha's point of view, then the desires and pains which that self experiences are seen to be, in some sense, illusory. I say in some sense, because in some sense they're not illusory, but in some sense they are at least a product of this self which manifests itself in the moment. And so when we see that, we see that these desires and pains are something that manifests in the moment as part of this self. And we see that this I, this ego, which is our creation of a sense of lasting self, at least in our lifetime, is also in some sense illusory. And so by doing that, by having this gut-felt experience, we can let go of the centrality of self, of our self in life. And from Buddha's point of view, the letting go of the self as central in our life is what brings freedom. Freedom to act, freedom to experience in life. Freedom not to be tangled up in the games that the self creates. So that's what the Buddha taught. But as I say, this letting go isn't something that comes just through intellectual understanding. And the Buddha's teachings were picked up again and again and again. And in particular, as I've spoken before, they were picked up by the Buddhist philosopher Nagarjuna, who was around about, I can't remember exactly, but around 500 years after the Buddha. And again by Dogen, who brought Zen from China to Japan. And both Nagarjuna and Dogen looked back to the Buddha and took on board the Buddha's teachings, but interpreted them in a radical way. Effectively, what they were looking at was what is the nature of this letting go that the Buddha talked about? What is the nature of this seeing the nature of the self and letting go? And what I want to use to explain this is actually an idea that's not either from Nagarjuna or from Dogen, but is language that was used by the ancient Chinese Chan masters. I don't remember exactly who said it, but they use the image of the gates that you pass through. Gates of experiential understanding that pass through. And they spoke about the gate of formlessness and the gate of signlessness. And the gate of formlessness is exactly what I've already spoken about. The experiencing of the self as having no eternal, everlasting form. The gate of formlessness is to understand dependent origination and to see dependent origination as something that causes the self. And to recognise that. And that, seeing the passing through the gate of formlessness is to have some taste of that, but primarily intellectually. But having some taste of it, a bit more than intellectually, but having some taste of it intellectually. And then to pass through the gate of signlessness is to have a radical experience of what this means. And the gate of signlessness is where... the gate of signlessness allows you to appreciate the formlessness of self deeply, not just intellectually. And what the gate of signlessness allows one to experience is that the construction of the self is identical to the way in which the self as it arises constructs and makes sense of the world. So what that means is that when we make sense of the world, I use the word we loosely, when we make sense of the world, the way that we make sense of the world is to create categories, to slice it up, to slice up the world and to create categories. There is the gong, there is Kate, you know, we create categories. And that category is a slicing of reality, placing boundaries on reality. And so that making sense of the world, the way that causes and conditions come in through us to make sense of the world, is exactly the same process whereby we create ourself. The slicing of reality into conceptual units is exactly the same thing that creates the self to say, this is me, this is not me, this is good for me, this is bad for me. So it's exactly the same process. And so, effectively, the self is created through a process of conceptual discrimination, slicing the world, putting barriers in the world between what is me, what is not me, etc. And this conceptual creation of the world is essential in everyday life. That is what we need to live. If we don't have that slicing of reality, then we're going to do something like step in front of a bus. Okay, so there's nothing wrong with that slicing. It's a natural part of life how it is. It's a natural part of making sense of the world. But that slicing also creates the self and binds us tighter into that self, the act of slicing. And so the gate of signlessness is to allow that slicing to fall away even just for a moment, even just for an instant, even just for a second. And then, so to allow that slicing to fall away, and by allowing that slicing to fall away, that experience of self falls away, just for a moment, just for a second. And that is exactly, as I'm sure you guessed, I'm about to say, what we do when we practice Zazen. There are moments when that falls away. And not only are there moments when it falls away, there's also moments when the self is bubbling, but there's the space behind the self, which is, in some sense, beyond that slicing. So it's not only that some moments the self slicing falls away, and other moments the slicing is going on, but there's awareness beyond the slicing. Awareness and experience of the moment in the now, which is, in some sense, beyond the slicing. And for those of you that like the Buddhist labels, that is called, Dogen called it, and Deshin Maru spoke about it, his Shuryo consciousness. Beyond thought and non-thought was how Dogen described it. Beyond thought and non-thought. And it's not something that we struggle to make happen from a Zen point of view. It's not something that we desperately try to make happen. That desperate trying just reinforces the self from a Zen point of view. It is something that emerges naturally, unconsciously and automatically through Zen practice, through simply letting go. So the only effort we make is the effort to abandon, the effort to let go in the moment. So that is what practice of Zazen is about, effectively letting go of this, to allow the gate of signlessness to emerge. But, as I said, we still need to cross the road without getting squashed by the bus. And that is something that Dogen, so I spoke about Nagarjuna. Nagarjuna was the master of helping us to see the slicing that we take in life and to let go of it. He was the philosophical master of that. Dogen, again, radically went beyond Buddha and Nagarjuna and said, yes, that's true, but we still need to live. We still need to act in the moment. And for what Dogen said was, action in the world requires both the illusory self and the letting go of the illusory self. Okay, so it requires both of these, and that is a paradox that one lives with. And for Dogen, that paradox can only resolve itself in the moment by action in the moment, which is grounded on Zen practice. But basically, he said action wholeheartedly in the moment. Wholehearted action in the moment goes beyond the everyday self, but also goes beyond the world of non-self. And so wholehearted action in the moment is to leap beyond self and non-self, to leap into a place where both self and non-self manifest themselves unconsciously, automatically, naturally. And so for him, wholehearted action was important. And that's why, to an extent, and to allow wholehearted action to emerge, you need, so I was thinking in some ways it might be a bit like a jazz player who plays and practices in a very, very disciplined way and then abandons that practice to the moment. I think there's something like that going on there. So it's this action, this wholehearted action in the moment, is to go beyond the conceptual and beyond the non-conceptual and practice in the moment both. And for Dogen, it's partly through bowing to the altar. It's partly through cooking the food. And for him, of course, monastic community was important. So for him, it was action in the monastic community, even though us in 21st century Western society, for whatever reason, need to take that action beyond the monastic community. But nonetheless, the same ideas hold. Action in the moment, action together with others in the Sangha, letting go of self and letting go of non-self, but being inspired by both, is what, for Dogen, was to make real the Buddha's teaching of non-self in life as it is. Thank you for listening. So we'll finish, again we'll chant the four vows for anyone that knows it.
Shi gu se gan mo on shu zhe me en se Segan.